times with siblings. Your personalities might have clashed no matter what, even if you hadn't been separated for all these years. Give it some time. I will, for the sake of my nieces. They're adorable, Julian. I can't wait for you to meet them. Ellie felt so revived after a night in Julian's arms that she nearly skipped the few blocks to South Battery. She found her father talking on the phone at her desk in her study. When he spotted her in the doorway, he pressed the phone to his gut.
I'm on the phone with the wholesale mattress store. I can't have my daughter living in sin. I've ordered 2 queen-sized mattresses for the other bedrooms upstairs. They're delivering them this afternoon.
Ellie tilted her head back and laughed. You're one step ahead of me. She dug her credit card out of her wallet and slapped it down on the desk in front of him. She went to the kitchen and was making waffle batter when Maddie arrived 30 minutes later. She shared with her the details of her trip, including her visit with Louisa, the reunion with her sister, and Leah's predicament relating to her husband's gambling problem. Maddie clasped her hands together and pressed them against her bosom.
Sweet Leah's done come home. I can hardly wait to see her.
Brace yourself, Maddie. She's not as sweet as you remember, but I'll let you form your own opinion. Ellie shook the excess batter off her whisk and set it down in the spoon rest. Leah has a burn scar on the side of her neck and face. She claims it happened when she was 8. I wanted to confirm with you that it didn't happen while she was living here.
No, there wasn't a mark on that child's head last time I saw her. Of course, that was days before she disappeared. I reckon it could have happened after I got the flu.
Leah remembers being sick. She thinks she might have been in Sally Bell's home.
Maddie's brown eyes got big. Yes'm. That's something old Sally would have done. Lots of folks died from the flu that year. She would have risked her job to keep Miss Leah alive and keep Miss Ashton from getting sick.
Maddie went to the refrigerator for oranges.
One thing's for sure. That's the first thing I'm gonna ask old Sally when I see her in heaven.
Ellie covered her mouth to hide her smile. When you have your answer, please find a way to share it with me. Maddie flashed her a toothy smile.
God willing, I'll visit you in a dream.
Ellie clapped Maddie on the shoulder. As long as you don't go haunting this house, I've had enough of restless spirits to last me a lifetime. Maddie was squeezing oranges, and Ellie was frying bacon a few minutes later, when she noticed 2 sets of big brown eyes peeping at her from around the doorway to the butler's pantry. She set her fork down in the spoon rest.
Good morning. Come in here, you two. I want you to meet a friend of mine.
Maddie, this is Bella and Maya. Maddie registered surprise at the girls' names, but she quickly recovered.
Bella and Maya, what pretty names for such pretty little girls.
Her knees cracked as she crouched down to greet them.
I knew 2 sisters once who named their dolls Bella and Maya.
Bella removed her thumb from her mouth.
Who?
Your mama and your auntie Ellie.
The 2 girls looked at each other, perplexed expressions on their faces.
Do you have any Pop-Tarts?
Maya asked.
My tummy is making funny noises.
We're fresh out of Pop-Tarts, Ellie said. But I'm making bacon and waffles.
Yay!
Both girls bounced a little on their toes. Maddie hoisted the girls onto the counter and gave each a glass of orange juice to drink, while Ellie removed the bacon from the skillet. Breakfast is almost ready, she said, setting out a stack of plates. Will one of you run upstairs and wake up your mom? Their brown eyes darkened.
Mama never eats breakfast, Bella said. We're big girls. We fix our own.
This came as no surprise to Ellie. Leah didn't seem the type to worry about her daughter's nutrition. I know you're big girls, but I like cooking for you.
Will you let me make waffles and pancakes and eggs for you while you're here?
Yippee!
Maya threw her fists in the air.
We love waffles and pancakes and eggs.
They joined Abbott in the studio, and the four of them gathered around her pine table for breakfast. When they were finished, Ellie took the girls and Pixie across the street to the park. For the next 2 hours, they climbed on the Civil War cannons, rolled around with Pixie in the grass, and raced one another up and down the promenade. They returned home, tired, dirty, and hungry. They found Maddie on the terrace, setting up for lunch, and Leah draped over the lounge chair, watching her. Maddie's face was set in a scowl. Leah had already offended her in some way. Leah scrambled off the lounge chair when she saw them. There you are. I've been waiting for you. Did you call your attorney yet? Not yet. I've been in the park all morning with your daughters. Ellie turned her back on Leah and peered over Maddie's shoulder at the plates she was distributing to each place. What are we having? I'm starving. Pimento cheese sandwiches and chips for the girls. Maddie's response was met with cheers from the twins. And tomato basil soup and chicken salad for you. Yum. That sounds delicious. Leah grabbed Ellie by the arm and spun her around to face her. I can't stay here forever, Eleanor. This house is giving me the creeps. If you think it's bad now, you should have seen it when all the furniture was here. I got rid of everything, which explains all the empty rooms, in case you were wondering. I expect to be reimbursed for half of everything you've sold. Leah was still holding on to Ellie's arm. She dug her fingers into her flesh and squeezed hard. Now call the attorney. Ellie jerked her arm free of Leah's grip. I'll call him after we eat. Abbott joined them for lunch. The sunshine had kept them warm while they were in the park, but in the shade of the table's umbrella, she felt the chill of autumn. The warm soup hit the spot. Abbott and Ellie engaged in a delightful conversation with the twins while Leah picked at her food and texted on her phone. Someone looks sleepy, Ellie said when she noticed Bella rubbing her eyes with her tiny fists. Are you ready for a nap? Bella tucked her chin and nodded. Why don't I take you up for a nap? Ellie said, rising from the table. Leah jumped to her feet and planted herself in Ellie's way. Let your dad do it. You have a phone call to make. Abbott smiled at his granddaughters. It would be my pleasure. He helped the girls down from the table and took them inside. Ellie picked up her phone and placed the call to her attorney. When the receptionist answered, she asked to speak with Bennett's assistant, who told her that Mr. Calhoun was tied up for the afternoon, but he could see her first thing in the morning. She thanked the assistant and ended the call. I have a meeting with him at 9 tomorrow morning. Fine, if that's the best you can do, Leah said and left the terrace in a huff. Ellie gathered the dishes and took them to the kitchen. She noticed Maddie was unusually quiet as they washed and dried the dishes. What's wrong, Maddie? What did my sister say to make you angry? Ain't nothing for you to worry about, Miss Ellie. You're clearly upset, which means it's something for me to worry about. Ellie dried her hands on the dish towel and leaned back against the counter. Talk to me. Maddie groaned as she lowered herself to the step stool. Ain't nothing specific. Just Miss Leah's attitude in general. She act like she don't remember me even though I know she do. And she's been bossing me around all morning like your grandma used to do. Do my laundry for me, Maddie. Fetch me a cup of coffee. Will you bring me some fresh towels? You were right. She ain't the same sweet little Leah I remember. She's plain rotten. I can smell her a mile away. Maddie snickered. You're so bad, Miss Ellie. I'm just telling the truth. What are we going to do about her? She shook her head slowly. She's family.
Ain't nothing you can do except let it work itself out.
Ellie retired to the sofa in her studio with the mystery novel she'd purchased in the hotel lobby in Richmond. But she couldn't focus, and soon drifted off to sleep. Julian called around 3, inviting them to a cookout at his house that evening.
There are 5 of us, Julian. That's too much trouble for you.
No trouble at all, he said. I'm making the hamburger patties as we speak.
Her desire to see Julian outweighed her apprehension about introducing him to her sister. As long as you promise to keep it simple, and I insist on bringing the wine and dessert. When her nieces woke up from their naps, Ellie took them to the market with her.
Can't Abbott come with us?
Bella asked as Ellie was buckling her car seat. He has to be here when the men deliver your new bed. Ellie was tired of waiting for her sister to correct her children. She didn't seem to care what they said or did. Do you understand that Abbott is your mommy's father? Bella shook her head. Well, he is, which makes him your granddaddy. She touched her fingertip to the little girl's nose. Seeing the wounded look on Maya's face, she touched her nose as well. He's your granddaddy too, silly. You can both call him that if you'd like. Or Gramps, or Pops. Maybe you should talk to him about which name he prefers. I think it might make him happy to be called granddaddy. Ear-to-ear grins appeared on the girls' faces. They tugged on Ellie's heartstrings so much that even though it was no one's birthday, she let them pick out a vanilla birthday cake with white icing and happy birthday written in pink frosting for dessert.
Chapter 33 Abbott. Abbott was growing tired of listening to Leah complain. But admitting that to Ellie would be admitting he was wrong, and he wasn't ready to do that yet. They'd gone out of their way to help her, and she'd done nothing to show her gratitude. He understood she was under a great deal of stress, but he sincerely hoped this wasn't her true personality. As much as he hoped Leah had some redeeming qualities hidden behind all the self-centeredness and greed, he doubted any such qualities would be forthcoming that night based on the way she threw herself at Julian. He was good-looking, successful, and kind, and the way he responded to Leah's flirtations made Abbott like him that much more. Ellie had found herself a keeper.
So, Julian, what do you do for a living that affords you such nice digs?
I could get used to living in a place like this, Leah said, holding her tummy in, her head high, and her bust out. Although, truth be told, she didn't have much bust to display.
You say that now, but living in a house this old isn't for everyone, he said, handing Leah a glass of wine. Most of these homes have survived too many hurricanes to count, as well as the massive earthquake of 1886. The houses lean, which means many of the floors slant. The plumbing never works the way it should, and they were built so close together you could see your neighbor's breakfast plate.
Oh, Julian, you're so funny. Leah let out a little giggle, which, fake or otherwise, was the first form of laughter Abbott had heard come out of her mouth since they had arrived in Charleston. Turning his back on Leah, Julian bent down to speak to the twins.
I have a little girl, too, you know, except she's not so little anymore. I don't get to see her very often. She lives in another part of the state.
Would you like to go upstairs and see her room?
They bobbed their heads up and down. Then what are we waiting for? He extended a hand to each of them.
I've set up appetizers in the garden, he called over his shoulder on his way out. Make yourselves at home.
They wandered through Julian's downstairs rooms, admiring his extensive art and antique collections, and the group of framed letters above his desk in his den from famous people whose homes he'd designed.
"Julian is an interesting man, Eleanor."
Leah ran her fingers along the back of his leather sofa.
"I hope you can hang on to him."
Abbott gave Ellie a half hug.
"I don't think she has anything to worry about. Julian seems quite smitten with her," he said as he steered Ellie toward the French doors.
She leaned into him and muttered,
"Thanks, Dad. I needed to hear that."
They sampled the antipasto tray Julian had set out on his rectangular teak table and then made themselves comfortable in the matching armchairs positioned around his gas fire pit.
"I've never been anywhere quite like Charleston," Abbott said, taking in Julian's manicured garden.
"If it's okay with you, Ellie, I think I'll stay in town for a while, get better acquainted with the city. I can easily work from here."
"Stay as long as you like. Why don't you invite Tracy down for a long weekend? I'd like to meet her."
Ellie looked at Leah beside her.
"I hope you'll stay as well. We can get better acquainted while we explore the city."
Leah responded with a humph. The smile disappeared from Ellie's face, but her expression remained determined.
"I hope you'll at least stay for a few days. We got the new beds set up for you today. You can move your things in tomorrow. The rooms are sparse right now with only the mattresses and bed frames, but we can go up in the attic tomorrow. There's a pretty chest of drawers up there we can use, and maybe an end table and a couple of side chairs. The girls and I are fine in the master bedroom."
"You're gonna get tired of me coming in and out for my things," Ellie said, hinting she'd like her room back. "This way, the girls can have their own bed. I'm sure it's crowded with all three of you sleeping in one bed."
Leah cupped her hand around her ear. "Are you hard of hearing, Eleanor? I said we're fine where we are. I don't plan to be here long anyway."
"Where will you go?" Abbott asked.
Leah shot him a death stare. "Obviously not back to Georgia."
"I don't think going to Louise's is a safe choice either," he said.
"Has she heard anything from your husband?"
"How would I know?" Leah snapped.
"I saw you on your phone in the garden earlier, while Ellie and the girls were at the grocery store. I assumed you were talking to Louisa."
"I told you, Louisa and I are not that close."
Leah moved to the edge of her chair.
"The two of you need to back off. You're suffocating me. Here's a news flash for you. We're not going to become this great big happy family you've always dreamed of. I've known you for less than 36 hours. I'm not obligated to share my travel plans or justify my actions to you."
Abbott could tell Ellie was struggling to control her temper.
"We understand that, Leah. We're just concerned for the girls. If you need to leave them with us for a few days while you sort out your problems, I'd be happy to take care of them."
"Just because you can't have children of your own, Eleanor, doesn't mean you can have mine."
Ellie took a gulp of wine and set the glass down on the arm of her chair.
"It's not that I can't have children, Amelia. I just never found the right man to have them with."
"But Julian is that right man, isn't he? Too bad you're too old to have children of your own."
The French doors swung open, and the twins danced onto the patio in pink tutus. Julian followed, waving a plastic fairy wand and wearing a tiara on his head. Ellie covered her mouth to hide her smile.
"That's a good look for you, Julian."
"As a matter of fact, I brought this for you." He removed the crown from his head and placed it on Ellie's.
You're my queen. He leaned over and planted a noisy kiss on her lips. Ellie's face turned the same shade of strawberries as her hair. In that case, as your queen, I command you to start the grill. I know two little girls who must be getting hungry. Julian grilled the best burgers Abbott had ever eaten, juicy and flavorful with the right amount of pinkness. He served the twins tater tots with their burgers and the adults an array of roasted and seasoned vegetables. They had birthday cake for dessert, and both Julian and Abbott asked for second helpings. Maya and Bella began to yawn not long after they'd finished eating. Ellie and Abbott offered to help clean up, but Julian insisted that they get the little girls home to bed. They bid Julian goodnight at the door and walked down the sidewalk toward the waterfront, Abbott with one exhausted, tutu-clad child draped over his shoulder and Ellie with the other. "Do you have any red wine at the house, Eleanor?" Leah asked, walking 5 paces behind them. "I'm exhausted. I feel like soaking in a warm tub." Exhausted from what, he wondered. As far as he could tell, she'd done nothing all day. Abbott had shared a special bond with Ellie since she first came to live with him as a traumatized child. But he doubted if he'd ever have that close relationship with Leah. He didn't expect to make up for 40 years in 1 week, and based on his observations during that short time, he neither liked nor trusted her very much, nor was he sure he wanted to waste the effort getting to know her. Jenny had turned his sons against him when they divorced, and he'd long since given up trying to be a part of their lives when they were so blatantly disinterested in being a part of his. He didn't know them well enough to know whether he liked them or not. But he regretted not having a relationship with their children, his 4 grandsons. If he could help it, he wouldn't let that happen with his granddaughters. He was quite taken with the twins, with their sweet little faces and spunky personalities. At home, he and Ellie deposited the children in Ellie's queen-size bed and left their mother to get them changed into their pajamas. He was brushing his teeth 10 minutes later when he heard the water running from the master bathroom. He sneaked back across the hall and tiptoed into Ellie's room, hoping for one last peek at his precious granddaughters. He couldn't get enough of them. Just being around them made him inexplicably happy. Perhaps because he'd missed the opportunity to know his own daughters at this age. He was kissing Bella's forehead when he saw the screen on Leah's iPhone light up with a text message from Loverboy on the table beside the bed. The message read, "I'll wait for you here, but hurry." Suddenly, unable to breathe, Abbott fled the room. Who the hell was Loverboy? Her husband? Was she somehow involved in his disappearance? Or was Loverboy another man? Was his daughter having an affair? It certainly wouldn't be her first. Whether it was true or not, according to Louisa, Leah had broken up her first husband's marriage. He found Ellie out back in the garden, stretched out on a chaise lounge with a mug of tea warming her hands. He sat down at the foot of her chaise lounge and told her about the text message from Loverboy. "My sister is certainly full of surprises. Either she's cheating on her husband or Ricky is Loverboy. If she's communicating with him, she probably knows where he is. Maybe she helped him disappear. What if he's planning to fake his death and she's planning to join him later? And here we are playing right into her hand." Abbott studied his daughter's face through the dark and realized she was being serious. "Come on, honey. You've been watching too many made-for-TV movies. That kind of stuff doesn't happen in real life.
Ellie shrugged.
She's got the part down right. Beautiful and mysterious with a troubled past.
Your scenario doesn't make sense. She agreed to go to the police.
Ellie shook her head.
Not at first. Not until we insisted. Going to the police legitimizes her scheme. I'm sure she realized that. And stupid me offers to give her half my inheritance. So now they have the money they need to disappear to Tahiti.
Abbott said, I'm placing my bet on another man. Loverboy isn't her husband. He's simply her lover.
Frown lines appeared on Ellie's forehead.
Either way makes for an uncertain future for the twins.
Chapter 34 Ellie.
Ellie dreaded sleeping in her mother's old room. But with the faint scent of magnolias lingering in the air, she felt oddly at peace as she lay awake contemplating what to do about her sister. She rose early, showered, dried her hair, and dressed in gray flannel slacks and a black cashmere sweater. Autumn had arrived in the Low Country, bringing overnight low temperatures in the 40s. The day promised to be cool and overcast, weather Ellie could relate to. The twins were already awake, wearing their pink tutus and sock skating from one empty room to the next downstairs. They skated over and greeted her with a hug when they saw Ellie watching them from the bottom of the stairs. The two of you are up awfully early. Have you eaten breakfast yet? They nodded in unison.
Maddie made us scrambled eggs and sausage with a Pop-Tart for dessert, Bella said.
Ellie chuckled. Dessert for breakfast? I think she aims to spoil you like she spoiled me. She gave the twins a squeeze and a pat on their fannies, sending them on their way again. She found her father working on his laptop in her studio. Morning, Dad. She kissed the top of his head. Is there any way I can convince you to go with me to meet with my attorney? I really want to do the right thing. I'm just not sure who I'm trying to do the right thing for. Leah, the twins, or me. He stood to face her.
I'll go with you, sweetheart, if you're sure that's what you want.
She smiled. I'm positive. I need you there to keep me from making a big mistake.
In that case, let me go upstairs and shave.
Can I fix you some breakfast? She called to him on his way out of the room. He paused in the doorway.
I had breakfast with the twins, he said over his shoulder. I ate a frosted strawberry Pop-Tart for the first time since I was a kid. Brought back a lot of memories for me. You should try one.
I've experienced all the childhood memories I can handle for a while, she muttered under her breath as she walked toward the kitchen. I hear you're offering frosted strawberry Pop-Tarts as the breakfast special this morning, she said to Maddie, who was taking inventory of the refrigerator and making out her grocery list.
They've been mighty popular. Better claim yours now before the last package disappears.
Maddie nodded at the box of Pop-Tarts on the counter. I'll just have coffee, Ellie said, pressing her hand against her gurgling tummy. My stomach is in knots over this meeting with my attorney. She sipped coffee and scanned the Post and Courier while she waited for Abbott to get ready. Because of the chilly morning, they opted to drive to Bennett's office building on Meeting Street. They were getting into the car 30 minutes later when Leah caught up with them.
Wait for me.
Ellie tightened her grip on her door handle.
This is a private meeting, Leah, between my attorney and me.
Leah stepped in close to Ellie, their faces only inches apart.
I have a right to be there, Eleanor. if you're going to discuss my inheritance.
It's not your inheritance, Leah. Abbott came around to the driver's side of the car. Your grandmother left everything to Ellie. She's not obligated to give you a nickel. She's doing it out of the goodness of her heart, although I don't know why she would even consider it the way you've been acting. I suggest you stay here and look after your daughters for a change.
Ellie pressed her lips together to keep from smiling. Her father had finally gotten frustrated with Leah's behavior. Whatever. Leah stomped off and went back inside. Parking was scarce, and they ended up having to walk several blocks to Bennett's office. The receptionist instructed them to take the elevator to the fourth floor, where Bennett's attractive young assistant was waiting for them.
Mr. Calhoun's ready for you now,
she said, and ushered them into his office. Bennett and Abbott hit it off right away. Bennett's collection of art from the Lowcountry marshlands prompted a discussion about wildlife. As they'd circled the room studying the paintings, Bennett complimented her father on the success of his career and asked him about his travels into the wild. Ellie cleared her throat to remind them of her presence when it appeared they might go on until noon.
I'm sorry, Ellie. I get carried away when someone expresses an interest in my art.
Bennett led them to the seating area by the corner windows.
Let's sit down.
Ellie and her father made themselves comfortable on the sofa, and Bennett took a seat in the leather chair opposite them.
Now, what can I do for you today?
Without going into detail, Ellie explained that she'd been reunited with a twin sister she didn't know she had, and that she was considering giving her a portion of her inheritance. Bennett listened patiently until she finished talking. To his credit, he didn't question her motives.
Unfortunately, it's not as simple as writing your sister a check. You may have to pay gift taxes depending on how much you plan to give her.
That's where I need your guidance. For the next few minutes, Bennett talked about unified credits and annual exclusions.
Your net worth is quite large, Ellie. If you're a good steward of this wealth, your money will provide for your family for many generations to come. Keep that in mind when you're making your decision. Does your sister have children?
Yes. Twin daughters, Maya and Bella. They're 3 years old. In the absence of children of my own, I would want to provide for them.
And you can do that prior to your death. There are certain tax benefits to helping them with their education while you're still alive. Unless you trust your sister to handle the money properly, I would retain control of it as much as possible.
Ellie inhaled a deep breath and drew herself to her full height. Thank you, Bennett. You've helped me make my decision. Ellie parked her car in the driveway and rummaged through her pocketbook for her checkbook.
What are you planning?
Her father asked as she wrote out the check. I can't keep my sister here against her will, but I can give her a reason to stay. She tore the check out of the checkbook and folded it in half. Not that I want her to stay, but I think the safest place for the twins is here with us. Leah was waiting for them in her studio, pacing back and forth in front of the windows. She hurried over to them.
Well, did you get the money?
This is all I can give you for now. She handed Leah the check. Leah unfolded the check and stared down at the number, a frown forming on her face.
What do you mean this is all you can give me for now?
Abbott's eyes grew as big as flying saucers when he saw the amount.
That's a hell of a lot of money, Leah.
The rest is tied up. Much of it in the house, Ellie said. Leah glared at her.
Then sell the house.
I can't until I make some improvements. But you and the girls are welcome to live here as long as you like. Where are they, by the way? I have a surprise for them. Leah dropped to the sofa.
outside playing under that blasted magnolia tree.
Ellie opened the door and called the girls to come inside. How would the two of you like to go on a horse-drawn carriage ride this afternoon?
They looked at each other, their eyes wide.
Really? Can we?
Maya asked. Ellie smiled. Really, we can.
Can Gopa come too?
Bella asked, using the name the girls had decided to call their grandfather, although no one could figure out why.
Are you kidding me? I wouldn't miss it, Abbott said and tickled each of the girls in turn.
And that's not all, Ellie said. I thought we'd take Julian to dinner tonight to repay him for last night.
Yippee!
They cried, joining hands and skipping around in a circle while they chanted Julian's name.
But we have some work to do first, Ellie said. We're all going to help bring some furniture down from the attic for your new bedroom.
Despite their efforts to make the space cozier, Leah showed no interest in moving their things into their mother's old room and the adjoining nursery where they'd once slept. She also refused to go with them on their outings.
Let her pout, Ellie said when her father expressed concern about Leah. We'll have more fun without her.
Bundled up in sweaters and light jackets, they left the house a few minutes before 4. The girls fell in love with the horse, Rico, and his driver, Chip, who was careful to point out attractions and tell stories appropriate for their age. What she learned about the history of Charleston made Ellie appreciate the city even more. This fascinating city was finally beginning to feel like home. Julian drove them to Mount Pleasant for an early dinner at Water's Edge on Shem Creek. They requested a table outside on the deck where the girls could watch the shrimp and fish boats returning from a day on the water. They lingered over dessert, not wanting the evening to come to an end. When they arrived back home, Abbott carried the girls, one in each arm, upstairs to bed, to give Ellie and Julian a few minutes alone. She poured them each a glass of red wine, which they took outside to the garden. Sipping their wine, they stared up at the full moon.
I'm becoming attached to your nieces, Julian said. I'd forgotten how sweet little girls can be.
I know what you mean. I will miss them if they leave.
She told him about Lover Boy and the gift she'd given Leah.
I've felt this way about very few people in my life, but I don't care for my sister. I hate to say that about my own flesh and blood, but I can't help how I feel. We're so different in looks and personality. It's hard for me to believe we're twins. Even fraternal twins have more in common than we do. I'm comfortable with my decision. I gave her enough money to make a fresh start somewhere if that's what she chooses to do. For the girl's sake, I hope she decides to stay here with us. But I don't see that happening.
I don't know, Ellie. If she thinks she can get more money, she might stick around. Can you handle having her living under your roof if she does?
She shrugged. We'll have to establish some ground rules. My mother made it clear in her diary how much she loved both of us. This is what she would have wanted.
Julian took her glass from her and set it on the table alongside his.
Things will work out however they're meant to be.
Cupping her chin, he kissed her lightly on the lips.
Come with me.
Taking her by the hand, he led her out into the yard. Guided by the beams from his phone's flashlight, they climbed under the branches of the magnolia tree and lay down on the ground.
I'm getting too old for this, Ellie said as she rested her head on his outstretched arm.
Ha! We have many more years of tree climbing left in our future.
He kissed her hair.
I realize we haven't known each other very long, but I've fallen hard for you, Ellie Pringle. It's too early to say the L word, but I never thought it would happen again for me. when you're feeling a bit more settled and this situation with your sister is sorted out, I would like to have a serious conversation about our future. I want you in my life, on whatever terms you're willing to accept me. The bottom dropped out of Ellie's stomach at his declaration of love. She rolled over so half her body rested on his. You're right. I need to see what happens with my sister before I can make any sort of commitment to you. She touched her fingertip to his lips. But one thing's for sure. You're the best thing that's happened to me in a long time. Maybe ever. Ellie slept in her mother's room again that night, and woke before daybreak to find two tear-stained faces staring down at her. She sat bolt upright in bed. What's wrong, girls? A fresh tear slid down Bella's cheek.
Mommy's gone.
A chill crawled over Ellie's skin. She slipped from beneath the covers and grabbed her robe from the foot of the bed. With the twins clinging to her legs, she crossed the hall to her bedroom. Her sister's clothes that had been strewn across the furniture were gone, as was her cell phone and purse. After looking in the empty bedrooms for her sister, she tapped on her father's door and alerted him to the crisis before continuing her search downstairs. The doors were locked. The lights were still off, and the newspaper was on the front porch. But there was no sign of Leah anywhere. Ellie went to the kitchen for coffee and found an envelope with her name scrawled across it on the counter next to the Keurig machine. She tore open the envelope. A lump developed in her throat as she read her sister's words. Dear Ellie, take care of the girls for me. How ironic that a woman as unfit as me ended up with children, while you have none. Fate is twisted sometimes. I know I've been difficult these past few days. I've been under a great deal of stress. You're lucky, Ellie, because you couldn't remember what happened to us in this house. You've led a relatively normal life. I, on the other hand, have been plagued by those demons every single day. Maybe I inherited the crazy gene from our grandmother, or maybe living with Nutcase Louisa for all those years had a negative impact on me. Either way, I'm not mentally stable, which makes me a dangerous threat to my children. If you ever tell anyone I admitted that to you, I'll call you a liar. You are blessed to have Abbott in your life. Our father is a good man. He will be a supportive presence in the girls' lives. Don't try to find me. I need space to find my way on my own. Leah. Her father entered the room, and he saw the note in her hand.
Is that from Leah?
It is. She handed him the letter. She scooped the girls up in her arms, carried them to the sofa in her studio, and held them close to her while they cried. Even though her discovery of Leah hadn't turned out the way she'd imagined, Ellie had recovered her memories and gotten the closure she desperately needed. Maddie's words echoed in her head.
Many things happened to you here, but having your sister taken away from you was the worst.
Leah would continue to be lost to Ellie, but she'd found her precious nieces in exchange. She would nurture them and love them with everything she had. She would turn this old house into a comfortable home, and they would fill it with laughter and love. Chapter 35 Ellie Julian had been to Magnolia Cemetery many times, and knew exactly where to find the Pringle family plot. On Sunday, they all drove out there together. Julian and the girls gathered acorns from a neighboring plot, while Abbott and Ellie visited her mother's grave. They stood side by side in silence
as they stared down at Ashton's headstone. She was buried in April of 1983, next to her father, Edwin, who had died at the young age of 48. If not for my grandmother, Mom might still be here with us today.
We can talk about what-ifs all day long, but it won't change a thing. When the Lord decides it's time for us to go, it's time for us to go.
He grabbed her hand. Your quest to remember your past has taught us both a lot of things.
I'm so blessed to have had you in my life. And while I didn't always make the best decisions for you, I made them out of love.
I know, Daddy. She rested her head on his shoulder. I don't even want to think about how different things could have turned out for me, if not for you. I could have ended up in an orphanage, or worse, with Louisa.
Don't think about it, honey. We're together now. I've decided to stay in Charleston. My place is here with you. We have each other, and we have the twins, and you have Julian. We will be one small, happy family.
There's nothing that will make me happier. No more obsessing about the past. From now on, we're marching toward the future. This has been an Audible Studios production of Magnolia Nights, written by Ashley Farley, performed by Rebecca Gibble, Rachel Jacobs, and Stephen Minash. Executive producers, Laura Gatchko and Mike Charzik. Producer, Neil Basic. Copyright, 2017 by Ashley Farley. Sound recording copyright, 2017, by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.